Stalin ignorantly supposed that the way to undermine Britain's position in the Middle East was to support the Jews, not the Arabs, and he backed Zionism in order to break the quote-unquote British stranglehold. Not only did he extend diplomatic recognition to Israel, but in order to intensify the fighting and the consequent chaos, he instructed the Czech government to sell it arms. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 189, The Beloved at the United Nations. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. As November 1948 came to a close, the United Nations neared its decision on the partition plan. Every vote counted. As Asaf Sinever tells us, Abba Ibn's wife Susie recalled in an interview that as the vote commenced, the Zionist leadership noticed that one Latin American delegate who had promised to vote in the affirmative was missing from the General Assembly, and so they had to go to the men's room, look under the stalls to find his shoes, and urge him to go vote. Vote he did, as did many others, with the Zionist diplomacy paying off. Sinever writes, quote, "At 4 p.m. on Saturday, November 29th, the waiting was finally over. Oswaldo Arana, the president of the General Assembly, instructed the 56 representatives, 'Those who are in favor will say yes, those who are against will say no, and the abstainers always know what to say.' Undersecretary General Andrew Cordier proceeded to read the roll call, which was interrupted by loud cheers from the gallery when the French delegate blurted out, 'Yes.' At the end of the voting and after a brief examination of the tally sheet, Arana declared, 'The resolution of the Ad Hoc Committee for Palestine was adopted by 33 votes, 13 against, and 10 abstained.' Britain chose to abstain while all 11 Muslim countries voted against partition, as did Cuba and Greece. But more important, 7 of the 17 countries that had abstained at the Ad Hoc Committee on November 25th now voted for partition, including the 4 countries under Ibn's watch. The 2/3 majority was secured, and members of the Jewish delegation embraced one another as wild applause and cheers broke out from the public gallery." End quote. And Sinever reports that on the journey from the United Nations, Ibn, his wife, and Moshe Shertok were, quote, "in complete silence, visibly overwhelmed by what they had just witnessed. The historic achievement at the General Assembly was almost too powerful to comprehend." End quote. Wondrous it was indeed, which indicates that while diplomacy played a crucial role in bringing the vote about, diplomacy alone cannot explain what occurred. Something larger, someone greater, was behind the scenes. This was discerned by the late great Catholic historian Paul Johnson, who reflected on Israel's origins in a 1998 article and commentary titled "The Miracle." And strikingly, the historical and religious reflections of Paul Johnson about Israel's birth aligned strikingly with the reflections of one of the greatest rabbis of the age. In a famous speech, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, describing Israel's birth, referenced a scene in the scriptural Song of Songs where the beloved, the Dod, understood as an analogy for God, knocks on the entryway of his beloved, understood as a reference to biblical Israel. Building on this reference, Rabbi Soloveitchik spoke of the vote at the United Nations as a divine knock, a sign of the miraculous presence of providence within history itself. In order to establish the wondrous nature of the United Nations vote, Rabbi Soloveitchik noted that both the United States and the Soviets supported the partition plan. He said, quote, "Both Russia and the Western countries jointly supported the idea of the establishment of the state. This was perhaps the only proposal where East and West were united. I am inclined," Rabbi Soloveitchik continued, "to believe that the United Nations organization was created specifically for this purpose, in order to carry out the mission which divine providence had set for it. It seems to me," he further reflected, "that one cannot point to any other concrete achievement on the part of the United Nations." End quote. And Rabbi Soloveitchik added, quote, "I do not know whom the journalists with their eyes of flesh and blood saw sitting in the chairman's seat during that fateful session when the General Assembly decided in favor of the establishment of the state. However, someone who at the time observed matters well with his spiritual eye could have sensed the presence of the true chairman who presided over the discussion, the beloved. It was he who knocked with his gavel on the podium. If it had been John Doe," Rabbi Soloveitchik added, "who called the session of the UN to order, the state of Israel would never have come into being. But if the beloved knocked on the chairman's podium, the miracle occurred. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh." End quote. Rabbi Soloveitchik's words fascinatingly parallel Paul Johnson's reflections on the miraculous nature of Israel's story. Johnson wrote, quote, "Another paradoxical aspect of the Zionist miracle, which we certainly did not grasp at the time and which is insufficiently understood even now, is that among the founding fathers of Israel was Joseph Stalin. Stalin had no love for Jews. Quite the contrary, he murdered them whenever it suited his purposes. In his last phase, indeed, he was becoming increasingly paranoid. Had he lived, he might well have carried out an extermination program rivaling Hitler's. Moreover, like Lenin before him, Stalin had always opposed Zionism. He did so not only as a great Russian imperialist, but as a Marxist. And he was consistent on the matter up to the end of World War II and again from 1950 to his death in 1953. But during the crucial years 1947 to 48, he was guided by temporary consideration of realpolitik and specifically by what he saw as the threat of British imperialism. Stalin ignorantly supposed that the way to undermine Britain's position in the Middle East was to support the Jews, not the Arabs, and he backed Zionism in order to break the quote-unquote British stranglehold. Not only did he extend diplomatic recognition to Israel, but in order to intensify the fighting and the consequent chaos, he instructed the Czech government to sell it arms. The Czechs turned over an entire military airfield to shuttle weaponry to Tel Aviv. The Messerschmitt aircraft they supplied were of particular importance. Then, in mid-August 1948, Stalin decided he had made a huge error in judgment, and the obedient Czech government ordered a halt to the airlift within 48 hours. But by then, the war had effectively been won. End quote. Meanwhile, Johnson further notes, as Rabbi Soloveitchik did, that the United Nations proposal received the support both of the United States and the Soviet Union, with President Truman being lobbied until the vote by a man with whom he had partnered in running the canteen in his regiment during World War I. That man was Eddie Jacobson. As David McCullough notes in his biography of Truman, Lieutenant Truman during World War I wrote to his wife Bess, quote, "I have a Jew in charge of the canteen by the name of Jacobson, and he is a crackerjack," end quote. Following the war, the two friends went into the haberdashery business together, a business that failed, but their friendship was maintained. David McCullough, in his biography of Truman, gives us the notes taken by Jacobson as he continued to lobby the president. Here's what McCullough gives us from Jacobson's hand. November 6th, Washington, president still going all out for Palestine. November 17th, again to White House. Wednesday, 26th, received call from White House, everything okay. November 27th, Thanksgiving, sent two-page wire to Truman. Friday, received call from his secretary, not to worry. November 29th, mission accomplished. McCullough tells us that Jacobson reported hearing from Truman that he, the president, quote, and he alone was responsible for swinging the votes of several delegations, end quote. Immediately after the passage of the partition plan at the United Nations, the partition plan passed, but war loomed. And here Johnson makes another point, which is that it was the war, waged and won by Israel, that gave it sustainable borders. Reflecting on his own memory of the War of Independence, when he was a student in England, Johnson wrote, quote, "I was an undergraduate. Academic opinion was then on balance favorable to the new Zion. Many dons had been brought up in the philo-Semitic tradition of Daniel Deronda, George Eliot's novel about a young man who discovers his identity as a Jew and dedicates himself to the Zionist cause, and they welcomed Israel as an intellectual and moral artifact. But opinion was also virtually unanimous that the state would be crushed," end quote. Crushed it was not. And Johnson adds that, quote, "it was the Arab leadership by its obduracy and its ready resort to force that was responsible for the somewhat enlarged Israel that emerged after the 1949 armistice. And the same mindset would create the more greatly enlarged Israel that emerged after the Six-Day War of 1967. In another of the paradoxes of history, the frontiers of the state as they exist today were as much the doings of the Arabs as of the Jews. If it had been left to the UN, tiny Zion probably could not have survived," end quote. Today, on Israel Independence Day, we celebrate the bravery and the strategy and the diplomacy of so many that brought Israel's birth about. But as Rabbi Soloveitchik teaches us, and indeed as Paul Johnson teaches us, we celebrate above all because of the divine knock that these events heralded, a reminder about the providential nature of Jewish history, a reminder that one need not be Jewish in order to sense in Jewish history. Thus, Paul Johnson closed his own reflection on Israel, the miracle, with the following, quote, "Israel is an elite nation. In my opinion, that is what it should be, and unashamedly so. Encouraging and training its people to be in the vanguard of the world's activity in agriculture and industry, in technology, in the arts, in education and administration, in the conquest and preservation of nature. Israel must have its place among the nations, to borrow the title of a book by its prime minister. But it is not a nation like other nations. Willy-nilly, it is and will continue to be sui generis, its people shaped by the terrible events of our century and marked by destiny," end quote. This is Mayor Soloveitchik wishing you all a joyous Yom HaAtzmaut. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.